Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7-9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. And today, we are getting prepped for Karen Reed's second trial. And I brought my dad back on to go through the motion dismiss, the appeal getting denied, the third-party culpable defense, and everything that's been happening over the last week since we heard from him last. So make sure you guys hit the like button and let's get into it. All right, Dan, welcome back. It's been a week since we talked last and yet so much has happened. I didn't even mention off the top yet another thing we're going to talk about. We might as well start with this because this is one of the craziest things I've ever heard happen in any case ever. And that is a juror who was not a deliberating juror, but she was a picked juror and ended up being picked as an alternate, randomly selected as an alternate, was a lawyer. Now is a lawyer on Karen Reed's defense team. What did you think when you heard that?
Well, I thought that it, obviously I thought oddest thing I've ever heard. Really bizarre. Can't believe it happened. I would never write a script where that happened. The second thing I thought was tremendous advantage for the defense. She really, really could be valuable. Not necessarily as a lawyer, but you know that we have on some of our cases, we've used focus groups where we have gone out and we've paid these companies to hire people to come in and we present our case to them to see, you know, what they liked, what they didn't like, so that we would know when we went to a jury, we would have a little bit of advantage of what those presentations we were making, which ones we should use and which ones we should scrap. Well, she is the best focus group you could possibly have. She was actually there. In focus groups, we usually give summations or only present one or two witnesses. She heard all the witnesses. She heard all the evidence. And she also heard the reactions of other jurors. So, I mean, you can't have a better focus group than her. They're going to pick her brain for every little detail. Did this work? Did this not work? How'd this come off? How did Karen Reed appear to you? Should we cut her hair? Should we have her sit with suits on? You know, those are the questions. Those are the kind of things that it's just going to make her invaluable.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. You've been practicing for 50 years. Have you ever heard of this happening?
Never even thought about this happening.
Well, even to take it a step further, she's not just on the defense team, but David Yannetti, I don't know if he's the lead defense attorney, but he's the Massachusetts defense attorney, hired her. So now she works at his firm. That's wild.
The closest thing I've ever seen is a lawyer that has gone out on a date with a juror afterwards, but they didn't have a second trial so that they could pick that, so he could talk to his girlfriend about what she thought. I mean, you know, that was.
I feel like that's less unbelievable. I honestly feel like that's less unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely less unbelievable. Yeah. That's the closest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. So one of the big things that happened over the last week since we talked last was the motion to dismiss, the defense filed for the egregious prosecutorial misconduct. No surprise it was denied. But as you read through the order from Judge Cannone, what stuck out to you?
Well, let me start. And this is, you know, hopefully no one's turned off by this particular comment, but it is the decision most every judge would have made. She made the decision every judge would have made. On the other hand, I believe that she wrote that order with a tremendous prejudice. There is a lot of bias in that order that she said specifically that makes the defense look bad. you know, when they complained about a video or something, oh, that video was foggy. I really couldn't really make out what was happening on the video. Oh, they really didn't intentionally do this. She made excuses for the prosecution all the way through that order. Even though she said, yes, these were violations, she made excuses. The other thing that really stuck out to me, and maybe it's just, you know, again, just me, is she didn't think there was anything wrong with the prosecution not giving him the video, because she said, well, you know, that's not really part of discovery. That's not really what you asked for. That's not really evidence. And that just boggles my mind that in Massachusetts that you have a video of a crime scene and it's not evidence. But that's
It's not the video of the crime scene. I think that's taking a little bit far. Weapon.
Yeah, I mean, it's relevant video. I mean, there's no doubt it's relevant. But she didn't see anything wrong that it wasn't presented. She saw nothing wrong with, I think it was Proctor, putting it twice, two different videos in his case file and not telling the Commonwealth about it. Why wouldn't you tell the Commonwealth about it if you put it in your case file? But she saw nothing wrong with that.
I don't know if I would say she saw nothing wrong with that. I think what she was saying is, even if it were nefarious, even if there were something wrong, the remedy is a second trial, not dismissal. So I want to keep getting through your highlights, but her general ruling that the best remedy for this is a second trial and not dismissal. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree with that. And that is the right ruling. She will not be reversed based on that ruling. Absolutely.
It's within her discretion.
Well, the purpose of a trial is to finally find out if someone's guilty or innocent, and not to, you know, play little games with the trial and dismiss a case and declare a person innocent. The real purpose is show the evidence and let a jury decide, not on a legal technicality. And that's basically what this is.
It did feel a little bit to me like if she was an appellate judge and she was seeing all these problems and she made the ruling to, no, I'm going to send it back for a second trial, that maybe she would have done that with all these problems from the prosecution. But because we're already here, it doesn't feel like a win for the defense, obviously.
Right. It's not a win.
Right. All right. So what else stuck out to you?
Well, if you want to go for, you know, some specifics, you know, her statement, in all but the worst cases, the appropriate remedy is at best a new trial, such as the one scheduled here to begin soon. So, and that's the way she starts this out. That's the second paragraph. So we knew from that, you know, how she was going to do this. A second trial protects the defendant's constitutional rights. So that's the way she views it. Even though all these things, bad things happen, the way to protect the constitutional rights of a defendant is to have a second trial.
So what else stuck out to you in that motion to dismiss specifically from Judge Cannone's order?
One is she asked the question, did she suffer any prejudice as a result of the discovery violations that cannot be cured by a new trial? And everything can be cured by a new trial because now all the stuff is known. The defense has everything. So it can be cured by a new trial. So, you know, so she goes right from there. And basically when she goes through, she criticizes the quality of the evidence. She talks about Proctor. Why he kept the material in his case file, we don't know. So she doesn't even care to know. To her, it doesn't matter why he kept it in his case file. He just put it in the case file. And she doesn't care why he kept it in the case file. So, you know, basically she didn't care about any of these violations. She didn't see them as any reason to dismiss the case, and a new trial will cure everything. And she's right.
And I don't think that she would necessarily agree with this, but as I read the order, I also feel like she's admitting that trial number one was not a fair trial. Would you agree with that? As you read through this and you see what happened and you see what's been turned over after, now while trial number two cures it, according to her, it was not a fair trial number one, even seemingly from reading this order.
I think that she would have granted a motion for new trial, knowing all of these violations now. I think she would have given them a new trial. I do.
How frustrating is it as a criminal defense attorney to see everything that came out after the first trial, because usually you would never know this because discovery is over. They would not continue to turn over video clips from the Sally port. That stuff wouldn't happen anymore. So seeing this happen after a first trial, how frustrating is that as a criminal defense attorney, knowing you could have got a new trial if you would have actually known all the stuff that didn't happen from the prosecution side?
Unfortunately, it happens a lot. It happens. I know we've talked about this in the past, but it happens in Brady material a lot, where lawyers learn that there's exculpatory Brady material sitting out there that was never turned over to them by the defense. These kind of frustrating things happen all the time. When you get enough of them, where the only thing that'll cure it is a new trial, that's when you get an order like this. Yes, the order is definitely biased. She's definitely excusing the conduct. She finds all sorts of reasons to excuse it. But the bottom line here is she feels a new trial is appropriate, and she's getting a new trial, and that will cure all these problems.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Mm-hmm. All right. The next thing I want to talk about is there's a couple other motions that were filed, the hearing, some things were argued. We'll focus on a couple different things. One is just kind of the second trial coming up. They're asking for some different things. One of those things is Karen Reed being able to listen with headphones to the sidebar conversation during jury selection and the trial. Judge Cannone already kind of said she could come up the sidebar with everybody else. Do you think there's a reasonable argument that it makes more sense? And what the defense focused on was overcrowding, clunkiness of the courtroom. It'll just be more seamless if we can have her listen for headphones.
And frankly, I agree with that argument. The bench is kind of crowded. I mean, look how many lawyers there are. If all those lawyers go up there, adding one more person, and really, what's Karen Reed going to add to it? I mean, really, what is she going to add to the bench conference? So I definitely think it's reasonable, and I think the judge should grant it because it will have a better look.
What about individual voir dire versus group voir dire? That's something they're talking about. The lawyers want to do more group stuff where they can ask the whole group question, get a vibe of the whole group. It sounds like the judge wants to do most of the questions individually because they're going to do questionnaires, things like that. What do you think about the voir dire process as they've discussed it, and how long do you think it's going to take to pick a jury?
It will take weeks and weeks to pick a jury, but the individual voir dire is the safest way to conduct voir dire in this case. If you want to prevent a mistrial or prevent a group of jurors from being dismissed as a group, because, you know, jurors spurt things out all the time, really biased and prejudicial stuff. There's so much in the news. I mean, look how much we see it and how much we know about it. Think about what it's like in Boston, where you're going to actually get a jury. You mean to tell me there's not some juror that's going to say, I think she's guilty, or why did they bring this guy Brennan in? He's a jerk. You know, those kind of statements, just a statement like that could prejudice an entire group of jurors and could throw them out so that you have to start over again. So the individual voir dire is the safe way to keep it controlled so that you don't poison the minds of the other jurors. And look, we're looking for justice here. I don't care how long it takes. We're looking for justice. If you're going to have justice, and it actually, in the long run, would save time to have these individual voir dires, because if you have to bring in another jury, and she already said it takes 10 weeks to bring in a jury, you just don't want that jury pool poisoned by some outrageous statements.
It took about 2 weeks last trial to pick a jury. What's your guess for this trial?
Oh, it's going to be longer than that this time. I would guess at least, I'll give you 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was saying, I think it's going to be somewhere between 3 and 4 weeks. They wanted to delay the start until April 25th instead of April 1st. And I was thinking, Judge Cannone said no, but I think she was going to wait to swear in the jury until April 25th. Now that's a moot point, but I think it could have taken those 3 or 4 weeks to pick that jury, which is what she was thinking as well. Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, they both filed a motion to continue. It was denied. And Judge Cannoni, I think, could have finagled when the jury was actually sworn in, which is when Jeopardy attaches. But we just got word, another denial from the higher court on the defense's appeal, saying that they wanted counts one and two dismissed and they couldn't go forward on counts one and two. Yet another loss, yet another blow. To me, it wasn't surprising. What did you think about it?
Not a surprise at all. In fact, I think we predicted that in another video that we did, that the appeal wasn't going to go anywhere. You know, a federal court, federal appellate court especially, is not going to interfere with a state prosecution at this level. You know, they're going to let it run through the appellate courts of the state before they start messing with it.
Just read an article from Vanity Fair about that lawyer that was a juror and now a defense lawyer. And I don't know if it was a quote from the juror or just from the person writing the article, but they even admit that the juror note, while all the jurors didn't necessarily agree with the way the foreman wrote it, he wrote it with a plural. All charges is what they're hung on. And it's things like that that make it difficult for a higher court to look back and say, yes, this was a verdict of not guilty. We're dismissing counts one and three. Now, as a prosecutor, you can do the right thing, the just thing. And if a jury really did acquit and you can bring them in and ask them questions, that's the better form, in my opinion, the better way and path to dismiss counts one and three, if that's really what happened, than the appellate court. I never had a lot of confidence that she was going to win in the appellate court.
Well, I saw an interview, I don't know if you did, of one of the jurors. He was a gentleman. And he said, if we'd have known, we didn't know what to do when we voted unanimously not guilty on count one. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know how the paperwork should be filled out or what we should do. And that's what screwed them up, is they did not know what they were supposed to do on that paperwork. And that's the judge's fault. It's the judge's job to explain to the jury what you do and make it clear to the jurors. Plus, the jurors, frankly, they should have written a question to the judge saying, Judge, we have a verdict. You know, we're unanimous on count one. What do we do? Yeah, but they sent no note out. It was a situation where it was a bad jury instruction, apparently, because they didn't understand it.
I would also say part of that blame has to fall on the lawyers, because as lawyers in closing argument, we explain a jury exactly how to fill out the verdict form, what you can and can't do. Like, especially in the personal injury world, we talk a lot about double reductions. It's like, if you put 30% and 70%, then don't also reduce your $1 million by 30%, because the judge will do that. We explain, because jurors have those questions. They may say 70%, the defendant is at fault, 30%, the plaintiff. And then they'll say, we think it's $1 million, but we're going to reduce it by 30%. That's a normal thing for a juror to mistake. We have to explain to them not to do that. And I think as we go through, you have to make sure you explain it. But, you know, as a criminal defense attorney, it's kind of scary to say you could come back unanimous on one and not on another, because then that's kind of inviting splitting the baby, not guilty on one, maybe hung on one and convicted on one. And you don't want that. So sometimes that does come down to the lawyers as well.
And frankly, usually the prosecutors explain the jury verdicts, not the defense lawyers. And right. You're right. The prosecutors stand there because the prosecutor wants the jury to know. You can come. You don't have to find, not guilty or guilty on all of them. You have a choice here. And there are also lesser included offenses. You can, the prosecutor is the one that explains those forms, because they know that if there's a screw up, the screw up goes against the prosecutor usually.
Yes. But you'd also agree the defense attorneys could have explained it like that. They could have pushed and fought, but it's always too scary of a moment when you're sitting there. And when you have a hung jury, it almost feels like a win. A lot of times you can work out deals or get charges dropped after a hung jury, not here. So defense attorneys very rarely push for verdicts unless they are overly confident that they won the case.
And in this case, I think it would have been a bad tactic to explain the verdicts, because I think they were looking for a complete win. They didn't think that it would be a piecemeal win. They thought they either going to win it all or lose it all. And when you start making explanations like that, you start putting it in the jury's mind. Oh, you know what? Maybe, hey, good idea. Let's go back and split the baby here, and we'll find him guilty on this one, not guilty on that one. I think these lawyers did the right thing. They were going for the whole schlemiel here, and they wanted it all.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that they knew what they were doing. They didn't want the verdict, even afterwards in the appeal, when they were like, we didn't have the opportunity to object and make our arguments and all that stuff. I think they did the right thing, because you never know. You send the jury back there. Great. They come back not guilty on 1 and 3. What if they talk a little bit more and they were like, you know what? Since we're agreeing with not guilty on these two, why don't you guys agree with us with guilty on this lesser included? And we'll be done here. And maybe people would have flipped their vote. And then it's a loser. Like, you lose that, you lose. And so, again, I think they did the right thing. I think the appellate courts did the right thing. I think the prosecutors should have considered dropping counts 1 and 3 personally. That, I think, would have been the right thing to do. That would have been what to do in the interest of justice when you started getting this information.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Yeah, I would have.
Would you have considered that if you were a prosecutor?
Absolutely, because you know why? I would have rather gone into this trial with the strongest case I had, and that would have been count two. And you know what? Winning on count two, that's a win. That's what I would have done. And, you know, that's the other thing too. People have to realize prosecutors aren't supposed to just go for wins. Prosecutors are supposed to go for justice. And if that was justice, if they had two not guilty unanimous verdicts, the prosecutor should have done the right thing. I really believe that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I had some hope initially with Hank Brennan coming on board, but before we get to how we think he's going to fare in trial two, which, at the end, I want to talk to you about what you expect from trial two. Differences, who usually has the advantage. We'll save that for the end. But before we get there, I do want to talk a little bit about the third-party culprit defense. So the defense named three potential third-party culprits, Colin Albert, Ryan Albert, and Brian Higgins. And they said they're going to go with the Bowdoin defense as well, which is just basically a horrible police investigation, that the cops just didn't do a good enough job to get this done. Can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. What do you think of those defenses generally? And then how do you think they're looking in this case?
All right, well, let's talk about, and using this case as an example, about the overlap in these defenses. Yes, here they've named three people. However, the same thing applies to those three people as applies to a bad investigation, because they're going to show how the law enforcement was prejudiced. In this case, they did not do a complete investigation because there were other people that they should have looked at and other people they should have interviewed. Regardless of whether they say these three people actually did the fact that they did not interview these three people. In fact, there were all sorts of weird things that happened with regards to these three people. Their names were not, one of them was never mentioned in a police report. One of them was the guy that was in the house where 50 cop cars are out there with a dead body in the snow. And this guy slept through it. Apparently he never came out of the house. There were just all sorts of inconsistencies. They found some phone records where someone said, I didn't call him, but in fact he did call him. And, you know, they've got all these inconsistencies. So I think they have, again, I don't know how the judge is going to rule. They've got an excellent argument on the Bowdoin defense. They've got about a bad law enforcement investigation and being able to present to the jury that they should have interviewed witnesses. They should have done this. They should have done that. This was a horrible investigation. I think it's a real good argument. It's a very strong argument. And I think the judge is going to give them that argument. Now, whether the judge is going to allow the FBI expert to testify, that's another question. But I have seen that over and over again where they have an expert testify to a bad investigation. It's not unusual. It's very common. And frankly, experts, you know, now in today's day and age, if they can just show special knowledge and ability, they should be able to do that. And an FBI expert, I would think, would qualify as a person about whether or not this was a good or bad investigation. So that's another issue the judge has to rule on. And then the third issue is, can they go after these three guys and say one or all of these guys actually did it? That's the tougher burden, I think, that they're going to have. because the evidence against the three of them is different. Each one has different inconsistent statements. Each one has different positions, different locations. So the judge is going to have to sift through. And I know that the defense, because they mentioned it in their argument for the court, they went through each of them and listed all the evidence and all the reasons that they feel like in their motion, they feel like they can go after these guys and why these three guys were possible that they committed the crime. They had motive. They had location. They were there. All sorts of things. So I don't know about whether they're going to actually let them name three people that could do the, but I definitely think she's going to allow them to criticize the investigation.
So last trial, she let them put in some of the evidence, but didn't let them open on it. The prosecutor didn't do a good job of setting the
parameters. Objections, right? Lilly didn't object in the last trial, did he?
Lally did object a couple times, but not during opening, which he could have and should have, not during closing when they did it. So they were kind of able to argue it. I think Brennan will handle it differently, but I think she's going to basically make the same ruling. She's going to allow them to develop the evidence, and if they can develop it, she will let them argue it, but she won't let them argue in open. That's what I'm expecting her to do. But you always say, if you can point the finger at somebody with a third-party corporate defense and argument, you should do it. Why is that?
Well, because you've got to give the jury, if the jury is going to find somebody not guilty, you've got to give them somebody that's guilty. It's just human nature that if they're not going to blame your client, it's easier for them to say it was somebody else, or at least the possibility of somebody else. It's like, you know, if your client has a motive, hopefully you find somebody else that's got a motive too, so that the jury can have more than one person. Because again, beyond a reasonable doubt is what we're looking for here. So again, if they're not going to put it on your client, they need to put it on somebody. So that's why it's very important for them to identify these other people. I think it's very important for them to identify these other people. The bad investigation is all well and good. They can, you know, cry and scream about that all they want, but nothing's better than actually having somebody to point to when you're doing your closing argument as the person that actually did it or could have done it rather than your client.
Yeah, I think that whether lawyers want to tell jurors to or not, they always think who done it. And if not this person, could it have been somebody else? Is it just as likely that it would have been Colin Albert as Karen Reed? And if so, that's reasonable doubt. All of those arguments can develop from a third-party culprit defense. As far as the bad investigation expert, she was asking them some very specific questions like, do you have a Massachusetts case? Because Jackson's like, all over the country, everybody allows this. Like you said, it's very common. But they couldn't find a Massachusetts case that allowed this. So do you think she's not going to let him testify? That seems crazy to me. Everybody that she's letting testify, and she's not going to let this go.
I think that she should do it. The rules of evidence, the cases they cited, the rules of evidence are almost identical in those other jurisdictions. I just don't see any reason not to allow it. If the expert satisfies Daubert, that's all that expert has to do. So I kind of think that she's going to let it in, at least to the quality investigation. I think, again, remember that decision by her may not have to be made until the defense puts their case on. So we may sit around and wait and see how bad does the state look in the cross-examination of the officers about how their investigation went and how much she's going to let them cross-examine them, including about the third parties. And if she lets them really get into that, then she might let them do it.
Yeah, I hope she will. I want to say I think she will, because she's let every expert in, basically, even the ones that are questionable to the public. So I hope she does let it in. If she doesn't, that'll be another tough pill to swallow, in my opinion, as we're just kind of evaluating the fairness of how this is going in Judge Quinone's courtroom. Okay, final topic that I want to talk about. Trial number two. Generally speaking, who would you say usually has the benefit or more of the benefit of trying a case a second time?
In my opinion, without a doubt, the defense. They get to see all of the state's evidence. They've seen all of the state's witnesses, all of the testimony. Plus, now they have a transcript of that testimony to be able to cross-examine them on. So if they trip up at all during their testimony, they can say, aha, but on, you know, didn't you say this before? And didn't you say that before? I definitely think it's the defense that has the advantage. Although I do think, interestingly, I think the state case is going to be different this time. I don't know how. I can't tell you how. I can't give you a specific. But I think this guy, Brent, I think he is going to put together a different case. He's going to present it differently, and he's going to prep it differently. I think that it's going to be a much different prosecution than the first one. I think it's going to be a tighter prosecution. I don't think he's going to let it go off in tangents. I think you're going to see a lot more objections from him. He's not going to let the defense just go crazy during cross. So I think it's going to be a different, he's going to present it in a different way.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
He's still going to have to deal with the investigation. Like there's, yes. There are still a lot of bad things he's going to have to deal with. I usually think it benefits the better lawyer, right? The better lawyer with more information, more transcripts. It's especially beneficial in a jurisdiction where you can't depose all the witnesses before the trial because now you've had your chance to question them. But in this case, as far as usually, when you say the defense has the advantage, it's because they're learning things. Prosecution already knows everything. When they put the case together, they have all the resources, all the evidence. But in this case, the defense was the one providing some of the surprises. And I think the prosecution learned a lot that they didn't know in the first trial as well. Would you say that that's different in this case than a lot of other criminal trials?
It might be, but think about how much more the defense got between the first and the second trial. They got a lot of stuff that they didn't have in that first trial. So they're going to know how to use that now against the state or the Commonwealth, against the Commonwealth. So I think that they've got an advantage. They have gained knowledge. They have gained video. They have gained transcripts. I saw that. I saw a list of additional discovery, I just read it online.
Yeah.
They got all sorts of stuff they didn't have before, including, again, maybe you can explain this to me. It could be because I haven't listened to everything in this case. But there are also some assistant district attorney notes or emails that were disclosed.
I think those are like tips and people calling in and like, hey, this person called and said they were with, because he mentioned that before that he's going to turn all that over. I think that's what those are. I haven't actually read through all of them. I definitely think the lawyering is going to be even better in this trial. I think Brennan is a better lawyer than Lally. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that Alessi, the lawyer that the defense team added, has been excellent in the arguments, especially with the experts. Would you agree with that from what you've seen?
I would agree with that. I would think that what you've got with him is the academic. He is going to be the one that's going to be doing all the legal arguments and case citations, at least most of them, and case citations. I don't think he's going to probably do a lot of witnesses, but he's going to do a lot of the legal work.
I think he's going to do a lot of the experts. I do. I think he will handle a lot of the experts. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. That's a huge difference between this case and the last one. Hank Brennan has way more experts on the list and ready to go with all these different expertise, dog bite expert, meteorologist, neurosurgeon to talk about head injuries, a better accident reconstructionist. So this is going to be way more expert intensive. I think it is going to be a much better prosecution round two. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, he's a different guy. He's going to do it a different way. Plus, interestingly enough, he is, from what I can gather, an excellent criminal defense lawyer. And so he's a guy that's going to sit down and go, okay, what's Jackson going to do with this guy? He's going to know. He's going to be able to predict what the defense is going to do in 99% of the cases. So he'll be able to anticipate the defense, what the defense is going to do. It's going to be a real tough job for the defense lawyers to deal with, man, because he knows all their tricks.
So I've never heard of him before this. I know he represented Whitey Bulger. Everybody's like, how do you not know who that is?
Whitey, yeah.
But before my time. But so I have no idea how he did as a defense attorney, but I just, from my estimation, watching how Lally prosecuted the case versus Brennan, I think Brennan is going to be tougher to beat. I think he's going to be tougher at trial. I think he's going to be tighter. I think he's going to hold their feet to the fire more. I definitely think all that. I still find it impossible to believe that they are going to get 12 people to convict Karen Reed with that investigation, with those cops, with those facts. Now, will it be a not guilty verdict? I don't know. It's tough. It's tough to get 12 people to agree not guilty. But I really have a tough time believing they're going to get 12 people to convict her. We'll see how the evidence comes out. We'll see what happens in the trial. There was something I was going to ask you.
Well, like, you know, you've said it many times. Jury selection is going to be a real, real key in this, because finding jurors that haven't already made up their mind in Boston, probably not going to be easy.
No, I agree with you. I remember what I was going to ask you. So a lot of things have been going around the internet these days since Brennan has said he wanted to protect her rights and have a fair trial. He has said the defense is creating injustices and making people doubt the system unfairly. He's called the defense liars a bunch. He has not chosen not to prosecute counts 1 and 3, even though we found out about this new juror stuff. He is trying to get text messages between the defense attorney and the client. He's doing all this stuff. It's very anti-criminal defense, and some would say anti-rights of a criminal defendant. Do you think this will affect him after he's done being a special prosecutor for this one case?
No, I don't. I think his phone's going to ring off the hook when the case is over. Everybody's going to know his name. Everybody's going to, you know, I mean, let's face it. Yes, he's done things that I wouldn't do, that you shouldn't do, but you certainly can't say he's not aggressive. You certainly can't say he doesn't fight hard for his client. So, you know, he's the guy the prosecutors pick. So if you're a defendant, you get arrested, I want the guy to represent me that the prosecutors pick as a good lawyer. Oh, his phone's going to ring off the hook.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Yeah, that's what I said too. And people can't understand it, and they get angry, and I understand, and they think, you know, he's slimy, I could never trust him, et cetera, et cetera. When somebody gets arrested, their first thought is, who is going to win for me? And who is going to win for me can have a bunch of different definitions. The most aggressive, the most connected, the most experienced, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for. If he's checking the boxes you want in relationship with the prosecutor's office, it's probably pretty good if they're going to pick him to prosecute the biggest criminal case of the year, of the decade, whatever you want to call it, in Boston, especially if he wins. If he wins, phone's going to ring off the hook. If he loses, maybe a different story. Hung jury? I don't know. But I feel the same way. I think that being a criminal defense attorney, people mostly hate criminal defense attorneys. So if you hate somebody for what they're doing, the people that get arrested are probably going to like certain things about that person. And that's a lot of what it is in the world, and hard for people to wrap their minds around, that it's like, I would never want this guy. It's like, okay, some of the reasons you would never want that guy are exactly why some people do want him. Whether it's Harputlian in the Murdaugh case, whether it's Rittenhouse's lawyers, whether it's Alan Jackson himself. There are people that are like, he's way too aggressive. Why is he so mean to these witnesses? I hate him. He thinks he's a big shot from California. That's exactly why some people want him as their criminal defense attorney. So that happens a lot when people go to pick their lawyers. I do think there's a way that Brennan could overstep some lines to make some people in the defense bar not like him. I don't know about clients, but what do you think about other defense attorneys in the local defense bar? Are they going to look at this and take issue with it?
They might, but honestly, he may not care worth a hoot. I mean, you know, it may not bother him the least, although defense lawyers don't like him. You know, one of the things, you know, you talk about, one of the things that happens a lot, you know, is I get asked, in fact, weren't you chief of the criminal division for the U.S. Attorney's Office? You know, weren't you the chief prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Middle District of Florida? People want that credential. They're going to want this guy, Brennan, because of their credential he's going to have once he leaves this trial. And people who believe in the system are going to believe that what Brennan did here, again, this doesn't happen in Florida. You know, we don't have private defense lawyers coming in and trying criminal cases in Florida, at least.
I kind of wish we do. It'd be so fun. It'd be so fun. How do you think?
Well, you know, they do in the military. You know, in the military, you go both sides. You can be prosecuting one day, you can be defending the next day as a JAG officer. But, you know, it's an accepted practice in Boston, and it is somebody, if you believe in the criminal justice system, then you believe that a criminal defense lawyer is the right person to protect justice. And that's what they think Brennan should be doing. And, you know, he's going to fight for his client. His client right now is the Commonwealth.
So the second trial is upon us. Are you going to try to watch more of this one than you did the second one, or than you did the first one, because now you're more involved in it?
Well, I think it's interesting. I really think it's interesting. Yeah, I think I will watch more of it. I might watch recaps as opposed to the entire trial, but yeah, I think I will.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see what happens. I do think it's going to be completely different. We'll see. Hopefully it's a just result. We'll see what that just result should be once the evidence comes out at trial, how it's presented, what happens, and then we'll give our legal analysis as we go, and then eventually guess what we think the verdict's going to be.
And I got to tell you, I always love well-tried cases. I love to watch well-tried cases, and I really believe this is going to be a well-tried case.
I do hate that there's no grounds for your objections. That bothers me the whole time in this trial, but I agree. I hope it's going to be tried well. I hope there's good lawyering. I hope it's fair. I hope it's just, and I hope we get a clean trial, and I hope we get a very good, fair, and impartial jury. That's the most important thing. So I hope we get that, but that's all we got for this episode. Make sure you guys hit the like button. Make sure you comment what you thought. Give us some reviews on the podcast networks if that's how you're listening to it. But until next time, we are out of here. Thanks for watching another episode of The Lawyer You Know. If you enjoyed the episode, please hit the thumbs up and share with your friends who may be interested here on YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. And don't forget to check out The Lawyer You Know podcast with new seasons dropping every quarter. If you have a case you want to talk to us about, if it's a personal injury case, wrongful death, catastrophic injury, car accident, or slip and fall case, please email us at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. And of course, all these links I just mentioned are included in the description below on this episode and every episode. So until next time, this is Peter Tragos, The Lawyer You Know.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.